97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, innovation in sports. Our guest, Fred Whitfield, president and vice chairman of the Charlotte Hornets. So Fred, not Apple, not Amazon, the NBA is the most innovative organization in the United States. There were a couple of others worldwide that were ahead of the NBA, but how does the NBA become the most innovative organization in the U.S.?
Well, I think it all starts with our commissioner, with Adam Silver. One of the things that I admire the most about Adam is just his vision and foresight. Innovation is a part of everything we do with our league. To have identified a young lady to run the innovation department, Amy Brooks, who also runs the team and business operations department at the NBA, is something that he felt was critical to us continuing to build our business, for us to think outside the box, to become more of a global organization. And innovation is what drives our business day in and day out now.
So it's Fast Company is the group that put out this list. And it included the NBA for breaking attendance records, growing in live streaming, total revenue, and it mentioned 2K League. Tell us about 2K League.
Well, I think everybody knows, you know, esports is continuing to grow. And to be able to, you know, think about a way that we could get into the esports business and do it with our franchises, with our teams, to be able to have it become part of organizations that already have expertise in marketing and sales and things of that sort. It was our way to sort of dip our toe into the esports business. Of course, you have, you know, other owners of other teams that are heavily involved in other esports businesses. In fact, Michael Jordan, our owner, has invested in the esports business. But, you know, we're looking as an organization at the Hornets into getting in the 2K League, literally the same way we got into the Gatorade League, the G League. You know, taking our time, looking at strategically, how can we go in and make sure we're successful in that business? But again, just another form of innovation. You know, you mentioned ticket sales and sponsorships and, you know, being innovative with our ticket pricing, dynamically pricing tickets. It, you know, you got to be thinking about innovation, you know, and using the same model that airlines use. You know, when we've got a high demand game and you aren't a season ticket holder, therefore you aren't guaranteed the lowest price that we have available for that game. If you want to come in and cherry pick the Lakers game or Golden State game, you may actually pay two or three times more than the next person next to you. And a lot of that is data driven. And of course, you know, we're looking at data throughout our entire organization, not just on the basketball side. Of course, we're using data so that we can look at analytics and analyze players better as Mitch Kupchak and his staff get ready for the draft and try to identify which players are best on the court at certain times during games with our current roster. But we're also using data to learn more and more about our customer. You know, no longer do you have a paper ticket to walk into our arena. You walk yourself in with your smartphone. And once you do that and scan your ticket in, you know, we know everything you do in the building. We know what you bought at the concession stand. We know what you bought in the fan shop. We know what your tendencies are. We know if you forwarded your tickets along to a family member or friend and what their buying habits are. And that allows us to be able to market wiser, be able to market more efficiently, and it's all data-driven, which is part of our whole innovation process.
One of the things that Fast Company mentioned by doing this and by bringing it in-house, it's not like it's you farm it out to somebody else, you're doing it yourselves. The kid and young person, 18, 19, 20 years old, wearing a 23 jersey in Lithuania somewhere, would never attend in person an NBA game, but can be an NBA fan.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, in this day and time when social media is clearly expanding globally, we want our players to be global brands. And with that, the NBA has purposefully done games in Europe, regular season games in Europe, preseason games in China, preseason games in Spain, preseason games, I think, next year in India, as we try to continue growing our brand. And what happens is, you know, these kids that get exposed to our games live, they may not live in the U.S. They become NBA fans. They start following certain teams or certain players online, following their social media. It allows us to continue growing our game around the world. And when you think about, you know, a fourth of our league being made up of players from other countries, which is really something you got to sit back and think about. You know, a fourth of our players are born in other places around the world and are playing our game. It certainly helps us be able to have global exposure and have people around the world follow us.
Fred, you mentioned all this data that you can gather. Here in the School of Media and Journalism, we had a guest speaker just the other day talking about some of the concerns of organizations having lots and lots of data. What can you say to the average fan? It's like, we're not going to exploit your data.
No, we aren't. That's certainly not the intent. You know, one of the things that we did as an organization was we invested in a data warehouse. And to your point, we want to do it internally. We want to capture the data. We want to use it to have better customer service. We want to know as much as we can about you and be able to use that in a positive way. If you're a casual fan and you come to five or six games a year because somebody forwarded you a ticket, and we understand what your buying habits are, if you bought a T-shirt or a basketball in the fan shop, we might send you a targeted offer that might invite you to come out to a game at a reduced price, maybe. You get a T-shirt when you walk in the door, which I'm sure will surprise you that we know that much about you. But it's really all about customer service, making sure that our fans know that we're concerned about them and the things they like. We want feedback from them. We want them to be able to get on their smartphone and be able to pull up statistics at the drop of a dime. All of that's on our app, and our app is becoming more and more useful. We want our fans to be able to see highlights again, replays again, be able to save those highlights and take them and show them to friends. That's all part of the innovation that we as an organization are doing with the help of the NBA.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle, and now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with Fred Whitfield about the NBA and innovation in the league and with the Charlotte Hornets. Fred, a lot of this comes down to brand, all right? You've been involved with one of the most recognizable brands in the world for quite a while. I mentioned the number 23. Who's that guy that we're talking about?
I think we know who he is, right?
So the whole branding thing, how important is that in sports today?
Well, I think it's everything. I've been with the Hornets now, Bobcats/Hornets. This is my 13th season. And so when I got to Charlotte in 2006, I inherited a brand that didn't have a lot of value, didn't have a lot of equity. We had to struggle to have people even be engaged with us at all, whether in the community or just coming to our games. And ironically, we were able 5 or 6 years ago to be able to go back and reclaim the Hornets brand. And with that, we got instant credibility. We got instant love in the community. People reflected back on the great days of the old Hornets organization that not only had a great basketball team on the floor, but did great things in the community. And we were getting equity that we hadn't earned as the old Bobcats brand. And so being able to relaunch that brand, and I think relaunch it the right way with the local hometown hero as our owner, with us listening to the data that our fans and people in general in the community were saying, don't mess up. Don't change the colors. Make sure you keep purple and teal. Make sure you bring Hugo back. You know, all those things that people identify with the old Hornets brand is what I think has helped us completely turn our business around since Michael bought our organization, agreed to make a $5+ million investment in rebranding back to the Hornets, and we've been able to enjoy a lot of success from that. I also look back on my days working at Nike Pro Basketball And our efforts to try and make sure that brand has stability, that it represented the best athletes in the world, that we as an organization at Nike put our athletes first and their performance and made sure that our products that we produced for them were the absolute best and best in class. And then my days working at Jordan Brand and having a small brand. When I went there, we were doing about $300 million a year. In 2003, our goal was to get to $1 billion a year. When I left there in 2006, we had grown it to $900 million a year. And now that brand is doing $3+ billion a year. And Michael hadn't taken a jump shot since 2003. And a lot of the equity and the growth within that brand was built around making sure that we expanded outside of just basketball players, making sure we brought some football players in, some baseball players, some younger basketball players in to keep the brand fresh and make sure that our core consumer still connected to Jordan Brand as it did when Michael was a young player. And I think because of that, Jordan Brand has enjoyed a lot of success as well.
I wanted to give you a personal anecdote about the Jordan Brand. So at least twice, once in China and once in Kazakhstan, I'm communicating with some people at a university there. And it's like, oh, yeah, I'm from the University of North Carolina. And just sort of a blank stare. The school where Michael Jordan played college basketball. Oh, everybody knows Michael Jordan. It doesn't matter where you go. The selling power of professional athletics. How can you quantify that?
Well, I mean, you can quantify. You just got to look at the numbers. And the numbers are amazing to think that Nike Inc. is doing in excess of $40 billion a year in business globally. You mentioned China. You know, I was very fortunate to have gone with Michael to China or Asia on his first trip to Asia, I'd say 15 years ago. And to see him welcome there really at the level of like a head of state when we were there, and to have the Chinese government really monitor and manage our travel around China, to see the number of people that gathered at the Great Wall when we were, unannounced, showing up there to take a little stroll up the Great Wall and just see how globally people were attracted to him and gravitated to him was something that really was an eye opener to me. And it was not just in Beijing, but it was in Taipei. It was in Hong Kong. It was in Tokyo. It was in all the places that we visited on that trip. And, one of the things I admire the most about Nike Inc. is that for years, Nike has tried to take its athletes around the world, different places, and do camps and clinics and try to teach young people how to play basketball so that they'll be enthused and want to buy basketball shoes and fall in love with these individual players and their brands, which obviously has helped Nike grow globally in basketball and in other sports.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about innovation in sports, the importance of celebrity in sports and brand in sports. Our guest is Fred Whitfield of the Charlotte Hornets. So, Fred, think back to the days in Greensboro, high school.
Great days.
Right? And then on to the Campbell Camels.
Fighting Camels.
Fighting Camels. Would you have thought that you would be part of an international brand of this magnitude?
Never in a million years would I have ever imagined that I'd be so fortunate to be working alongside arguably the greatest basketball player ever.
I don't think it's arguable at all.
Me either. Me either. But to have him as my boss and as my partner in the Hornets organization, for us to be in our home state that we love so much, working for his NBA team that we grew up enjoying and watching play, and then just being able to watch that brand grow and watch our Hornets organization do things out in the community, be able to give back, do great things for people in need, to be able to experience things like All-Star Weekend that we just hosted with the city of Charlotte and the NBA and our regional visitors authority. Never in a million years would I ever have imagined that, you know, Adam Silver would know me, the commissioner, by name, and me be able to sit in meetings with him and him be interested in our organization and its success. So, you know, as I reflect on my career, and I give so much credit to my parents who encouraged me to, you know, stick to the education, focus on basketball to the extent that you can and go as far as it takes you, but make sure you get as much education as possible. And so as I think about the opportunities I've been given, you know, they're all education driven. I was an economics major at Campbell. I got my MBA there as well. I played as a college basketball player, coached while I was in graduate school, and then went back to law school. And I honestly think that subconsciously I use, you know, some facet of all those different degrees almost daily in what I do for a living. And I think but for having that commitment and going back to school, I'm not sure the people that have taken a chance on me and hiring me for certain very, very important roles within their companies would have done so.
So, Fred, you're involved not only with the team, but also with the arena, of course. They sort of go hand in hand. You have this little event coming up there in 3 or 4 weeks. I think it's called the ACC Tournament.
We can't wait. We're so excited to be hosting the tournament in the middle of March. It's something that we lobbied hard for and put together, thankfully, a compelling argument to the ACC that we'd host a great tournament. I think they're going to be surprised. I say they, the entire conference, will be surprised how walkable Uptown Charlotte is, how vibrant it is, what great hotels we have, what great restaurants, how good our building looks. We just finished the All-Star weekend, and the NBA gave us high praise on our customer service, the way our building looks, our big scoreboard, you know, our ticket takers, our ushers. We all are so excited to be able to host the ACC in our building. And we want to do everything we can to put our best foot forward with the city and our regional visitors authority, because we want to host more of these ACC tournaments down the road.
So we're recording this one day after the big rivalry game, Carolina-Duke. Obama was at the game. He sort of has to be somewhat neutral. I don't think Michael has to be neutral, and you don't have to be neutral. So you were pulling for the Heels, right?
I was. I was, you know, and I have the utmost respect for, obviously, Coach K and what he's done. And I was fortunate to be able to spend some time this morning with Coach Williams. And I enjoyed spending time with him and just sort of reflecting on last night's game and looking forward to the March 9th game already. And God willing, I'll be at that game live and look forward to that. But you're right. Michael is, you know, 100% Tar Heel through and through. And because of my relationship with him over the years, I've spent an enormous amount of time in the Carolina family and have been embraced by the Carolina family. And I'm so appreciative of that. And I just look forward to a great ending to the regular season and can't wait to have the ACC tournament in Charlotte and hope the Heels show up and play well.
The basketball museum at Carolina, one of the most interesting things to me in that museum is the letter from Kay to Michael Jordan. We think you're going to be pretty good. Best of luck, or something to that effect. It's just the rivalry, the passion of basketball in this area, UNC students rushing Franklin Street. It from a sporting perspective, from a sports fan perspective, it doesn't get any better than that. So 30 seconds about basketball in this state.
Well, I tell you, basketball in this state is unrivaled anywhere in the country. And I tell you, Coach K has done such a phenomenal job in building the Duke program. He and Michael have unbelievable respect for each other. Coach Smith, Coach Williams have just taken the Carolina program to the highest of heights. And we all need to celebrate the game of basketball. And as hard as we all pull against each other and fight each other on the court, we all are pulling to have success of the ACC and keep these great rivalries going for years to come.
That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Fred Whitfield. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.